For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Mark McCloskey on fire on Newstalk STL.
I get no doubt, but I get
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey on fire. You know, in the United States today, we're in this kind of bizarre world where the federal government, this Biden administration, is actively at war with the citizens of the United States, actively trying to eliminate our personal freedoms, destroy our constitutional rights, and create this all-powerful, monolithic government. There's only two things that stand between totalitarianism and the average citizen. One is the United States Supreme Court, and the other are the attorneys general of the various states who have the power to stand up against the federal government and sue Biden every day if they can, and by God, they should. We're honored to have with us today one of those stalwart opponents of totalitarianism, the attorney general of the state of Missouri, Mr. Andrew Bailey. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I guess you've been the AG for about 53 weeks now, right?
Yes, sir. January 3rd, 2023, I took office shortly after Senator Eric Schmidt swore into his seat, and we've been hard at it ever since then.
Yeah, no, you really have been. Tell us a little bit about your background. Some of the folks out there may not be that familiar with you. Tell us about how you grew up and how you became Attorney General of the state of Missouri.
Yeah, I can do, Mark. Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me on. I'm a Missouri kid, grew up in mid-Missouri, went to the University of Missouri on an Army ROTC scholarship, volunteered for a combat arms branch of service in the Army after 9/11, was an armor officer, so I was trained on tanks, but immediately deployed to Iraq after graduation, and I was able to command an armored cavalry scout platoon with the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment in Nineveh Province, Iraq in 2005-2006. And my platoon was selected to participate in the largest offensive operation of 2005 to take the fight to the enemies of freedom in Iraq and rid the city of Talifar, Iraq, of its insurgent stronghold. It was a privilege to get to lead soldiers in combat. And came home from that deployment, moved to Fort Hood, Texas, threw all new equipment, and went right back to Iraq as part of a 15-month deployment as part of the surge. So spent 2 years overseas in Iraq fighting for freedom, and then came home, and it was time to go to law school. So I went back to the University of Missouri on a post 9/11 GI Bill, graduated law school, and I did special prosecution from the Attorney General's office all over the state of Missouri. Ended up settling down in Warren County, Missouri, just there on the fringe of the St. Louis metropolitan area, and was an assistant prosecutor. It was there that I was also the attorney for the county juvenile office. Ended up adopting some kiddos out of the foster system, and all of a sudden needed to find a job that paid a little bit more. And so ended up at the Missouri Department of Corrections, and I was there for about 6 to 8 months. And Governor Parson ultimately pulled me up to be on his staff, and I was with the governor for just about 4 years prior to having this opportunity. So it's just a humbling privilege to get to serve and get to continue and fight and win for the people of the state of Missouri.
Yeah. Well, you know, being in the Department of Corrections for, 6 to 8 months, that's about what Kim Gardner wanted me to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mark, it was a privilege to get to meet you, back in 2020 as you were having to go through that terrible ordeal. And, you know, you opened the segment by talking about how we're in this fight against the enemies of freedom. And it's been a consistent theme throughout my professional career. And you yourself have literally stood on the front line to exercising your constitutional right to defend your home, your family, your property against the enemies of freedom, against the tyrannical mob that's motivated similarly to President Biden and his army of bureaucrats. And so such an inspiring story. And I remember taking my daughter to see you speak at the Warren in Lincoln County Warren in Montgomery County Lincoln Day dinner back in, I think it was 2021. And my daughter still talks about it, Mark. You're truly an inspiring character.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. But, you know, the thing that burns me is now Congresswoman Cori Bush standing outside my gate with a megaphone chanting, "You can't stop the revolution. You can't stop the revolution." Well, you know, on the second day that they attacked the House, which was July the 3rd, 2020, I had a Navy SEAL named Jim standing next to me on that day. We were standing out on the porch, and there's Cori Bush chanting, "You can't stop the revolution." Well, Jim is standing there resting his hands on the butt of his M4 saying, "Oh, yes, I can."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that their version of revolution is tyrannical socialism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a revolution at all. It's more authoritarianism. I mean, they act like they want a celebration of freedom and overthrow of the government, but really what they want is more tyranny, more government control over everyday Americans' lives, and they hate you because you support the Second Amendment. You and I agree that the Constitution exists to protect us from the government, and that's a very inconvenient truth for the woke left mob.
Yeah. You know, for this bold experiment we call the United States, is the first time in the history of the world where seminal documents were created specifically to protect people from the power of government, not to give government power over the people. And boy, the socialists just hate that.
They sure do. And, you know, we're in the fight for our lives right now. I mean, I think the question put to the American people in the next 12, 18, 24 months is, do we want to live as a free people or not? And if we do, it is time to clear the swamp out of Biden and his swamp rats that are gnawing away at our constitutional freedoms. Certainly, we've seen the rise of the administrative state, that alphabet soup of administrative agencies that seek to control our lives. And there, as you know, there's no sanction in the United States Constitution for an unelected fourth branch of government.
Yeah. Well, you know, in an example of that, I'm going to talk about this in a later segment today. But think about what happened last week or this week with the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, out of commission, in intensive care, incapacitated. The president doesn't even know what's happening. What does that teach us? That teaches us that our government is run by a bunch of backroom swamp creatures. You don't know the name of them, but it's not the Secretary of Defense, and it's not the President of the United States, because they can be completely out of the picture, and we're what? We're launching attacks on terrorists on the other side of the world. Who's ordering this stuff?
Well, and simultaneously, you've got Putin invading Ukraine, and you've got China saber-rattling at Taiwan. You've got North Korea on the rise again. None of that happened when President Donald Trump was in office. You know, the bad actors on the world stage feared President Donald Trump, so they stayed in their holes and hid. But President Biden seen it so weak and enfeebled that they're, and you're right, there is no chain of command. They're asleep at the, our American leadership is asleep at the wheel, and so bad actors across the world are emboldened by that.
Yeah, and for a guy like you that spent 2 years over there putting your life on the line to defend this country, it's got to rile you a little bit that we're now trying to become more totalitarian than the governments that you fought against in Iraq.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's scary stuff. I mean, I believe in the freedoms guaranteed by that come from God, not man, but are, you know, guaranteed by our, like you said, our seminal document, the Constitution of the United States, and certainly willing to put my life on the line to defend it, and proud to be leading that effort now in the fight for freedom in courts across the United States. You know, we've got 28 lawsuits pending right now against the Biden administration, fighting back against his encroachment upon our individual liberties and freedoms, his violations of the Constitution, certainly fighting back against the rise of that administrative state like we talked about.
Yeah. Well, you know, and one of the things that I think is most striking, well, when I was running for Senate, I said this every day, when the government of the United States, when the president of the United States says something or declares some policy that's totally unconstitutional, like conspiring with tech companies to censor Americans and to quash dissent, how come they're not every single Republican senator and every single Republican member of the House of Representatives standing on the Capitol steps screaming, we can't have state-sponsored censorship in a country with a First Amendment. We can't have this in our democratic republic. But it was just crickets every place.
Well, that's exactly right. And the case, of course, is Missouri v. Biden. I'm so proud that it bears the name of our home state. And we're going to the United States Supreme Court on that. You know, that through the discovery process in that lawsuit, we discovered that the Biden administration had a relationship of coercion and collusion with big tech social media to silence American voices in violation of the First Amendment right to free speech. And guess what? The only voices they censored were conservative voices. They can't win the argument, so they have to stifle debate.
Oh, yeah.
But it violates the Constitution, and we're taking them to task.
Well, and, you know, they've tried everything they can, and you know, Tucker Carlson was talking about this the other day. You know, first they try censoring Trump. They cut him off of Twitter during a presidential campaign. Then they try to indict him. Then they try to impeach him. Then they indict him again and sue him, and all in jurisdictions where he's not going to get a fair shake. And every time they do it, all he does is get stronger. I mean, that says something about the character of the gentleman, but it also says something about the state of our country, where our federal government, our federal law enforcement, the Department of Justice, and the FBI, and the prosecutors are actively working to undermine an election by destroying the leading candidate.
Yeah, that's right. They're using lawfare and undermining the rule of law. You know, we used to elevate the rules of the game above the players and the outcomes, and since 2020, the left has clearly jettisoned that approach. I mean, it's truly embarrassing, but you raise a good point. I mean, could it be construed that, you know, the Americans that believe in President Trump and are fighting back, and the fact that he is rising in the polls, you know, that finally our voices are being heard. Maybe Cori Bush needs to wake up and understand we are the revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the left believes that the few of us that still believe in the Constitution are such a small number we can be ignored, and that they can use propaganda and the mainstream media and education to brainwash everybody and to have us all move in lockstep. Well, you know, I agree with you. Every place I go around the country, people's eyes are being opened up and people are recognizing how close we are. We're right at the precipice, and if we don't pull back right now, we will never recover the freedoms in this country.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's time we have warriors in political office that are willing to fight and take the fight to the enemy instead of stand silently while evil men seek to take away our freedoms and strip us of our constitutional rights.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and you touched on it earlier, but, you know, meaning no disrespect to the now senator, former attorney general of the state of Missouri, when Kim Gardner was a circuit attorney in St. Louis and announced from the day she got elected that she wasn't going to enforce the law, that there were whole swaths of statutes passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, which she was not going to respect, including all drug crimes and all sex crimes and what she would consider nonviolent crimes. And it occurred to me, you know, that's a dereliction of duty. She took an oath to defend the Constitution and the laws of the state of Missouri, and then she swears she's not going to do that. And I couldn't have been happier when you took over the reins at the Attorney General's office to call her on the carpet for exactly that. But my favorite day of the last 53 weeks was when you broke the news they had her videoed going to nursing school when she was supposed to be representing the people in St. Louis.
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, no, that, you know, you're right. I mean, she had completely abdicated her official duties, both her legal and ethical responsibilities to the people of St. Louis and the people of the state of Missouri, and the rest of us were suffering. We couldn't let one woman continue to hold us hostage. And, you know, my heart goes out to the victims of crime that were suffering under this yoke of tyranny. She had, you know, handed over responsibility for public safety to a criminal element and had weaponized her office to go after people like yourself who were merely exercising their constitutional rights and were clearly allowed to do so under the laws of the state of Missouri and under our constitutional form of government. So it was time for her to go and the rule of law to be reestablished. I mean, again, think about not only ideologically what motivates the left and how evil it is, but as a practical matter, who benefits and who is harmed? I mean, she did more damage to her own constituency than a foreign invader could have done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my favorite thing was when she and the mayor of Kansas City were standing outside in St. Louis bragging about their accomplishments, and gunfire breaks out in the background, right? And she says, oh, my son and I just get used to going to sleep with the symphony of gunfire, accepting that as a normal way of life in a major American city.
It's an embarrassment. It's an absolute embarrassment. She was an embarrassment to the state of Missouri, an embarrassment to our criminal justice system, and I'm glad we were able to take action to get her removed. You know, that was after me being in office less than 45 days. We were willing to file that, the writ of quo warranto, the legal proceedings to ultimately have her removed. And I'll tell you, we would have won that case. I'm glad she resigned when she did because that expedited her removal. And I think it's time the legislature look at those quo warranto statutes and update them so that those processes can move more quickly. When the state has to move in and remove a local official who has abdicated their responsibility, that process needs to move quickly so that order can be restored.
Yeah. And, you know, it was more like almost a military event when she had a press conference, right? And they were shouting down the one reporter from CAMOX that had the gall to ask a question. But here's the thing. At least in St. Louis, we had honest judges. When we moved to have her removed from our case because of her bias and prejudice, the courts granted it. And the Court of Appeals affirmed it, and the Supreme Court wouldn't review it. And so,
yeah. Absolutely.
The problem is that, for example, Donald Trump, he's in these jurisdictions where the prosecutor is corrupt, the judges are corrupt, and the juries don't care about the facts. And even though these folks like Fannie Willis and Letitia run specifically to get even with Donald Trump, he can't get them booted off the case.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's clearly a two-tiered system of justice where, the enemies of freedom the enemies of the rule of law can forum shop to pick favorable venues like that. You know, luckily here in Missouri, like you said, the courts had functioned exactly accordingly to the rule of law. And we're thankful to live here in Missouri where we still value freedom and justice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, we're a red state, and we need to stay that way. I'm going to have to take a break here for just a second. If you can hang on, we'll bring you back in the next segment. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with Attorney General Andrew Bailey in just a minute.
Get more Mark McCloskey at newstalkstl.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on News Talk STL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. You're listening to Mark McCloskey on Fire on News Talk STL.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have the honor this afternoon of speaking with Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. General Bailey, you know, right now there is kind of a standoff down in the Texas border, down in Eagle Pass, where Greg Abbott sent in the National Guard, and the National Guard armed guardsmen are standing between the border and Customs and Border Patrol agents that are not there to keep people from crossing the border, but to assist them in their illegal crossings and then give them their cell phones and their $2,200 and their free plane tickets. This is it's getting to be kind of an interesting situation down there in Texas.
Yeah, Mark, you're exactly right. And I think there's even a lawsuit that's been filed because the federal government essentially dismantled a fencing system that the Texas state government had put up. That's the federal government destroying state property. And under what authority? I mean, this is a disastrous catastrophe at our southern border. It's making Missouri communities less safe. Every state's a border state at this point. If we don't have a border, we don't have a country. I was proud to go to Congress last week and actually testify in favor of the impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas, the Secretary of DHS. This is a cabinet-level official who is, again, he's abdicated his duties. And I drew the exact correlation between him and Kim Gardner. You know, you've got these folks that hold these high offices who are willfully and unlawfully refusing to execute their official duties. And they need to be removed and held accountable. You know, we've got three lawsuits pending right now against the administration for their failures at the border. I'll tell you, the numbers are staggering. I mean, 1,100 reported incidences of human trafficking in the state of Missouri in 1 year alone, 1,500 deaths in 1 year from fentanyl, 43 children who are now dead because of accidental exposure to fentanyl. These are innocent victims who had no say in the matter. And that's all attributable to Secretary Mayorkas' utter disaster at the border. And so holding him responsible, getting him out of there, and again, reestablishing the rule of law when it comes to our national sovereignty is imperative.
Yeah. 286,000 residents in the city of St. Louis proper. Last month alone, 302,000 illegal aliens that encounters, meaning people we know about. How many people don't we know about? I mean, something the size of the city of St. Louis comes into this country illegally every month now, and our government is encouraging it. And, you know, I've been down there on the border. We've seen the Customs Border Patrol, in cooperation with the cartels, bringing people across the border and putting them on buses and sending them into the countryside. But I've got a question for you because I saw this with my own eyes. I mean, we went down to Catholic Charities, and my wife Patty is sitting here with me, and I are both Catholic, so we don't have any anti-Catholic bias. But it was one of the creepiest places I've seen in my life. The kids are warehoused there. The windows are all painted black, so you can't see in. We got the front door open on a pretense that we're going to donate money to them. There's a security wall right behind the door. So when you come in, instead of walking into a lobby, you got to shuffle sideways, right? You've seen those kind of security barriers. And when you put your ears up to the wall, you just hear not just dozens, but hundreds of kids screaming in there. And then they just get dispersed into the country. And nobody knows where the hell they go, what happens to them. How come, ChonBenet Ramsey's on the front page of the People magazine for 30-some years when one kid in America disappears or dies under suspicious circumstances. But there's tens of thousands of kids coming into this country and just disappearing into, what, slave labor, sex trade? What are we going to do about that?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, there was a recent report that accused the Biden administration and specifically Secretary Mayorkas of basically facilitating the child sex trade into this country by allowing this loose sponsorship program where essentially someone can get on an app on a phone in their home country in South America, Central America, and sign up to connect a child from their country with a sponsor in the United States and then essentially ship that kid across the border. And our federal government allows that to happen and help facilitate the transfer. I mean, it's absolute insanity. And there are people suffering because of it. This is a humanitarian crisis of the Secretary and President Biden's own making. And we've got to put a stop to it. We can't stand for this any longer.
There's got to be a special place in hell for these folks. That's all I can say. And then you think about the fact you're younger than I am, but I'm old enough to remember the riots during the Vietnam era, people protesting the Vietnam War, people burning schools and bombing banks, and 57,000 people died, or 57,000 American soldiers died during the Vietnam conflict. And it was considered to be an outrage around the country. And now, what, over 100,000 people a year in the United States die of fentanyl overdoses, the vast majority coming through the southern border. Once again, where the heck is the outrage?
Yeah, Mark, you're exactly right. I mean, this is the kind of, and look at how little the mainstream media covers it. But I'll tell you this, when I was in Congress last week testifying on this matter in the impeachment hearing against Secretary Mayorkas, the Democrats have abandoned the argument that it's not a problem. I will say that. They will now concede to you that the border crisis is a disaster of epic and historic proportion. There is no longer any argument to be made that the border is secure, that somehow things are going well. They can't hide from that anymore. So now they've shifted, and their excuse now as well, well, you know, if you get rid of Secretary Mayorkas, that's not going to fix the problem. Yeah, but it's going to hold a wrongdoer accountable.
Yeah.
And it's going to add credibility to our legal system to show we still respect the rule of law. And if he's not going to do his job, the fact that he's willfully abdicated his job is an impeachable offense under the original understanding of our constitutional process.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to be defending. He's a Secretary of Homeland Security, right? The secure word means something in the past. I had Tom Holman on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him how long it would take to fix the border. And he said he just talked to Donald Trump the day before about that, and he promised the president that in 90 days he can fix the problem once they get reelected.
I believe him. I've seen what a secure border looks like. In 2005, my platoon helped secure a sector of the border between Syria and Iraq. There were insurgents. There were smuggling humans, smuggling contraband, smuggling munitions that were used against American and friendly forces in Iraq. And my task was to screen that Syrian border to prevent the jihadists from coming across. And we stood there and we did it. We didn't let anyone injure. You know what the federal government does now? They hand out passes and say, yeah, come on in, report for court in 10 years if you have the time. Here's your cell phone. Here's your money. Go wherever you like. We'll buy a Greyhound ticket.
Yeah.
Now, imagine if we'd done that in Iraq. There would have been more bombs on the streets, more carnage. And that's exactly what we're going to see here in the United States of America. I mean, it's a sad day. It's a sad state of affairs when the Iraq-Syrian border in 2005 was more secure than the southern border of the United States of America in 2024.
Yeah, and you know, just the concept, we've been down to the airport in McAllen, Texas, standing in line, going through what I call the full butt sniffing, going through TSA and having to show our IDs. And then there's a column of illegal aliens walking past TSA and getting on chartered airplanes on your tax dollars and mine, not having any vetting whatsoever, not having any real proof of who they are. Get a cell phone, $2,200, and a free plane ticket to anywhere they want to go. While American citizens are suffering, it just makes absolutely no sense unless you want to actively destroy this country.
Well, and that, I think that can be the only ambition behind allowing these criminal aliens in without any kind of vetting, without any kind of processes in place. They've hung an open sign on our southern border. You're right. I mean, there's a human toll, to be sure, but there's also a financial toll on taxpayers here in the state of Missouri. We paid $114 million, taxpayer dollars, for health care for illegal immigrants over the past several years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's lost revenue that could have been helping the people of the state of Missouri. Instead, it's helping to subsidize a criminal alien enterprise.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to shift gears on you a little bit here, because when I was at the City of St. Louis Central Committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, one of the guys handed me a copy of Your Health Matters. It's a publication here in St. Louis. City public health officials make Plan B kits available. City of St. Louis is stockpiling and handing out the morning after pill to St. Louis citizens. And he asked me, isn't that illegal now with our current statute now that Roe v. Wade's been overturned and we have a no abortion policy in the state of Missouri?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is illegal to distribute these dangerous drugs that destroy human life, and it puts the health and safety of the mothers at risk as well. I mean, this is the kind of destructive policies, the kind of ideology of the left, the cult of death that we've come to anticipate, and it violates state statute.
Yeah, cult of death. I mean, that's exactly right. They have no respect for human life. One of the other things I wanted to talk to you about is the statute against the mutilization of minors. The so-called gender affirming care, meaning mutilating human beings at an age when they're too young to consent. If their parents did it to them directly, they'd go to jail for child abuse. But the parents can send them over to Children's Hospital and have them mutilated, and the left is all up in arms because Missouri has a statute against that now.
Well, apparently the left celebrates diversity by sterilizing children.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is the kind of cult of death. When I say that, this is what I mean. That's the kind of celebration they have. But proud of the work I've done since day one, launching an investigation into the clinic in St. Louis that was, deceiving parents, according to the evidence that we have, that was racing children down this pathway towards this assembly line of sterilization with the distribution of dangerous, harmful puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones or irreversible surgeries for kids under 18. Those kids are now victims of a system. They'll never get to enjoy the full spectrum of adulthood because the adults that were in their lives supposed to be protecting them instead harmed them.
Yeah.
And so I'm proud of the work that we did to put a stop to it. The General Assembly passed a bill, Senate Bill 49. My office defended it in court. We're the first state in the nation to successfully defend a measure like that in court at the trial court level. And again, it took a successful litigation strategy and cross-examining their witnesses, putting their science to the test, and calling detransitioners, again, victims,
yeah,
who are willing to take the stand and talk about how they're forever harmed by this system. And Missouri should be the safest state in the nation for children, and I'm proud of the work we've done to make that happen.
Absolutely. Well, we're proud of the work you've done, too. And full disclosure, posted on all my social media today, Patty, and my endorsement of Andrew Bailey for Attorney General. I think you've done a heck of a job in a short period of time. Why don't you tell us how people can support your campaign and how we can help you out?
Well, Mark, first and foremost, I can't thank you and Patty enough for your friendship and support. Like I said, it's a privilege to have gotten to know you over the years. I'm just so grateful for your patriotism, your friendship, and your support. Check us out at baileymo.com. That's BAILEYMO.com. Love your support. Love to hear from you. Follow the great work we're doing, fighting and winning for Missourians. We've been on the job for about a year now, notched several key landmark victories in the history of this state and the history of this nation. We haven't hit our ceiling yet. We're going to keep fighting and winning for Missourians.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a few of your accomplishments. Give us a few more. Tell us what you're most proud of in the 1 year you've been Attorney General.
Well, certainly getting rid of the Soros-backed Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner out of the city of St. Louis has got to be high on the list. Putting an end to the transgender sterilization clinics that were harming children across the state of Missouri, shutting that process down, taking the most important First Amendment suit, Missouri v. Biden, to the United States Supreme Court. We'll be at the Supreme Court arguing that case in March. So that's the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has opined that it's the most important First Amendment suit in this nation's history. What's at stake is our right to say what we please, absent government censorship. And so we're never going to stop fighting. We filed multiple lawsuits against the Biden administration to protect our right to keep and bear arms. We put Mayor Tashara Jones on notice that she was not going to be allowed to take away AR-15s and AK-47s from law-abiding citizens like you and me. Again, just fighting the good fight to protect Missourians and our constitutional rights.
Hey, and I don't know if you saw this. Apparently, 22 attorneys general have signed a letter to ask the government to prohibit the sale to civilians of .223 ammunition.
I did see that, and I anticipate you'll be hearing from my office in the coming days on that issue.
I thought we might. Well, my campaign hats when I was running for Senate said 1 + 2 equals free. First Amendment plus Second Amendment equals freedom. And as always, without the Second Amendment, the rest of our rights are just hypothetical.
Yes, sir. Couldn't agree more.
Well, Andrew Bailey, you're doing a great job. I'm proud to support you for Attorney General of the State of Missouri. And give us your contact information one more time before we let you go.
Yeah, check us out at baileymo.com. That's BAILEYMO.com. Love to hear from like-minded individuals across the state as we continue to fight and win for the people of Missouri. Mark, I wish you and Patty the best as we enter this new year, and I just can't thank y'all enough for your friendship and support.
I appreciate it, and we sure support you, and we sure are thankful that for all the work you've done and emulate Ken Paxton, sue Joe Biden, go to bed, get up, and sue Joe Biden again.
Absolutely. We'll keep after him.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Attorney General, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that was Andrew Bailey, Attorney General of the state of Missouri. A heck of a nice guy. Fought for our country. Born and raised in Missouri. And is a true constitutional conservative. And I'm very proud to call him a friend. Well, we'll be right back with my week in review. We'll talk to you in just a moment.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up on NewstalkSTL. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Mark McCloskey on Fire. Well, you know, it's been a very interesting week. I mentioned this when I was talking to the Attorney General. But we had a situation here where back in December, Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, decides that he's got prostate cancer and needs to go in for some elective surgery. It happens. He's a 70-year-old guy. I think it happens in one out of eight adult males, twice as often in African-American males as in the rest of the population. And so, you know, it happens. But apparently he has some complications. And apparently his complications are sufficiently serious that he's in intensive care. Well, let's back up. People all talk about that, but one thing they haven't talked about is the fact that when he had what they euphemistically call minimally invasive surgery for his prostate tumor, that requires him to be put under general anesthetic, maybe at a minimum managed anesthetic care, meaning he's not totally unconscious, meaning that he doesn't have an endotracheal tube or anything like that, but he's still unconscious. Well, you know, in a world where, what's it, 12, 14 minutes for a ICBM to hit us from China or from the Soviet Union, well, Russia now, being unconscious for an hour isn't a good thing for a guy who's supposed to be in charge of our military. Being unconscious for an hour isn't a very good thing when you haven't told anybody else you're going to be unconscious. And then he has a bad outcome. He has complications. He has a post-operative infection, apparently, which puts him out of service for days in ICU. Well, this is kind of what I do for a living, right? I've been doing medical malpractice cases for the last, 35 years. One of the things that we know is that when you're getting up there in the years, like Lloyd Austin, he's 70 years old, you get a urinary tract infection, which is one of the things we're told he has. The first thing that happens is your brain goes offline. You become confused. You've got a metabolic encephalopathy, which is a long-term meaning your brain goes offline because your electrolytes and your body is all messed up, and you can't think right. Now you got the most important person, sixth in line to the presidency, most important person in the chain of military command under the president, who's incapacitated, who's in the ICU. He's in the ICU because of a urinary tract infection, which most of the time will result in some mental or complete mental disability. And so he's not running the military. Joe Biden's not running the military because he doesn't know that his Secretary of Defense is out of commission. And then to make matters even better, because this is a government that lies to you at every possible opportunity about every possible thing, when somebody asks, hey, where's that big guy that used to be around here called the Secretary of Defense? His office issues a statement saying he's working from home, okay? And, of course, you know, when we're running the world, when we're running the Pentagon, well, we like to take a week off now and again and work out of our basements because, after all, that got Joe Biden elected president. But they say he's working from home, which is, of course, just a flat-out lie. If there's anybody out there in my listening audience that still believes a word that you hear come out of the mouths of any spokesperson for this government or any mainstream media person, then you need to check yourself into a hospital because there's no possible way to believe anything they say to us. But here's the real kicker. Real kicker is that this stuff doesn't happen by accident. This stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum. This stuff happens because they want to teach us a lesson. This stuff happens because they want to further an agenda. This stuff happens because they want to train us to behave in a certain way and to expect certain things. One of the things that this administration, one of the things that the deep state wants us to learn is to accept less every day, less from the government, less from our own lives, less happiness, less beauty, less of everything, so that you can't distinguish a new high school from a new prison, and you can't distinguish a new apartment building from a new prison, that everything is bland, everything is ugly. Every television show is about fighting and conflict as opposed to happiness or opposed to good family values. But what's this Lloyd Austin, Joe Biden continuum teach us this week? What did they want us to learn? They wanted us to learn that the elected officials and the officially appointed officials have absolutely not a single damn thing to do with running this country. That the deep state runs the country. The powers that be run the country. The lobbyists run the country. The billionaires run the country. And the media runs everything because they can make or destroy you with fake news overnight. And then they just hit until it destroys you. So what the deep state wants us to learn from this week is that the Secretary of Defense can be offline. The president, who's always offline, doesn't even know about it. And the government works just fine. Because after all, this democratic republic is merely an illusion for a totalitarian deep state that always runs everything, always. And that we can elect a new president, we can elect, and he can appoint new cabinet members, but it won't make any difference because the great mysterious hand in the back darkness runs everything. There's only one person we can elect president that will fix that. There's only one person with the force of will and the courage and the substance and the gravamen to fix that and to wipe that slate clean and to drain that swamp, and that's Donald J. Trump. You can talk about Nikki Haley if you have the guts and you feel like vomiting, or you can talk about Ron DeSantis. But, you know, these people, Ron DeSantis' case, he's done good things in Florida. He's a true conservative. But he looks like Alfred E. Newman, and he lacks a moral and physical structure. He lacks that force of will, that unstoppable force that Donald Trump represents. I don't think anybody else can do it, at least nobody running for president right now. And Donald Trump says he knows who he's going to have as his vice presidential candidate. I wish I knew. I was kind of hoping it might turn out to be Tucker Carlson. But that was the lesson we're supposed to learn this week, is that it doesn't make any difference who you elect. You might as well stay home and sit in your hands, because we're going to run things and it's going to work out just fine. You leave us in charge because you're too stupid, you're too selfish, and by the way, you're too privileged. The changing tune just a little bit. Johns Hopkins put out a letter. Letter is written by Chief of Diversity Officer Sherita Hill Golden in the hospital's monthly Diversity Digest. And we learned why we should be irrelevant in this world, and that is because we're privileged. She writes, "Privilege is a set of unearned benefits given to people who are in a specific social group. Privilege operates on a personal, interpersonal, cultural, and institutional level, and it provides advantages and favors to members of dominant groups at the expense of members of other groups. In the United States, privilege is granted to people who have membership in one or more of these social identity groups. White people, able-bodied people, heterosexuals, cisgender people, males, Christians, middle or owning class people, middle-aged people, English-speaking people. Let's see. I'm white. I'm able-bodied. I'm heterosexual. I'm cisgendered. I'm male. I'm a Christian. I own stuff. I'm middle-aged. And sometimes I can even speak English, okay? And so she tells me that as a result of that, privilege is characteristically invisible to people who have it. People in dominant groups often believe they have earned the privileges they enjoy, or that everyone could have access to these privileges if only they worked to earn them. In fact, privileges are unearned and are granted to people in the dominant groups, whether they want those privileges or not, and regardless of their stated intent. Ladies and gentlemen, Johns Hopkins says it. It's got to be true. We can all sit on our asses and be as lazy as we want to, and because we're white Christian males, we'll have wealth dropped upon us. We'll all drive AMG Mercedes and live in 10,000 square foot houses and drink caviar and eat champagne, or maybe it's drink champagne and eat caviar. But I mean, we don't have to do a damn thing because we're white male Christians. We're middle-aged, middle class, and we own stuff, and therefore we don't have to work. And you know what? If we do something, if we go out and we work hard and we make a living and we buy a nice house, we buy a nice car through our own efforts, it's a zero-sum game. See, I didn't realize that until today. When we make money, when we make something of ourselves, it's taking it away from somebody else, because favors to members of dominant groups are at the expense of members of other groups. And so when I go out and I try a lawsuit and I recover money for an injured client of mine, that money comes from an insurance company, and that means that some person of color somewhere else is going to have that money extracted from. Wait a second, they don't have that insurance. They're not paying for that premium. In fact, they're not going to suffer anything when I make money or my clients are compensated for their injuries. But no, I'm wrong. I've spent my whole life taking from others instead of creating wealth and employing people and buying stuff that are made by other people so they have jobs. I'm taking stuff away from people when I work hard and make a living and spend money and build things and employ people. I did not know that. Well, I'm going to stop right now. Obviously, if I don't do anything, I will become wealthier than I am now, because that privilege is given to me and I don't have to work for it. So all middle class, property-owning, white Christian males out there, just stop working right now and your lives will be much better. Hold your breath, all right? Such complete, absolute crap. Going back to the topic then of the border, my favorite thing that I learned this week is that the city of Chicago has run out of places to stack their illegal aliens. They've filled the hotels. They've filled the parking lots. They've even filled some military encampments. So they've run out of space. So they're starting to store their homeless illegal aliens in city buses. Well, you know, that's going to be, what, 10 below zero in Chicago tonight? These are buses that were designed to drive people around the city. They have chairs in them. They don't have beds in them. They don't have restrooms in them. What's going to happen when you put 60 illegal aliens in a 60-person bus in 20 degrees below zero wind chill and say, now enjoy yourself? And by the way, a lot of these people come from places where they've never seen snow before, where they've never seen cold before, where they probably don't have cold weather wear, and they certainly haven't been hardened up to it. You imagine some poor son of a gun who comes up here to the United States on Biden's promise of a paradise on earth. All you have to do is walk 2,000 miles through Mexico, cross the border, get put on a train or a plane or a bus at public expense, and get sent up to Chicago where there's 2 feet of snow and 10 degrees below zero or 20 degrees below zero and that stiff, nice wind blowing in off the lake, and how much you're going to enjoy sitting up all night in a city bus freezing your end off just so that you can aid Joe Biden and Alejandro Mayorkas's plan to destroy our country. It's it just kind of makes you sick, doesn't it? I talked about this a little bit earlier, and that's the Texas National Guard now being deployed by Governor Abbott. And the federal government, Greg Abbott and the people of Texas, had attempted to protect themselves against the invasion by putting up razor wire and temporary barricades and the pontoon barricade down the Rio Grande River. At one point, they're using shipping containers to make temporary walls. Every time the state of Texas does something to defend itself, the federal government sues them to say, no, you can't defend yourself. Well, we have Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution that says that when there is an invasion, the states can protect themselves. Now, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, has declared an invasion and has deployed the National Guard. And they took over down in Eagle Pass this week. The National Guard took over a border crossing. National Guard deployed troops with troop carriers and weapons and armor and everything they normally keep with them to protect this border crossing and to keep people from crossing into Texas. Well, of course, what does our federal government do? The government that's charged with the responsibility for defending this country against invasion and charged with defending the integrity of the United States and the safety of the American people, what do? They sue the state of Texas and Greg Abbott to try to prohibit Texas from stopping an invasion on its borders, stopping an invasion that's destroying the cities in Texas, destroying the economic validity of Texas. All these people come over, and I've said this every week, they get a free cell phone, they get a free plane ticket, they get $2,200 in cash, they get a stipend every month, which exceeds what the average person gets from Social Security. And so you've got illegal aliens crossing into this country by now the hundreds of thousands a month, and they're getting more support from the United States federal government than your mother and your father or your grandmother or your grandfather or any American serviceman who's living out in the street, who's served their country, come back with emotional difficulties or drug addictions and are living out in the street. Do they get put up in a hotel for free? Do they get a free cell phone? Do they get a stipend every month from the government? Hell no, because they're just American citizens. There's nothing less worthwhile in this country, according to the federal government, than an honest American citizen, because we get squat from the government. We just get identified as privileged people that have to be hated and as terrorists, because after all, the Department of Homeland Security, the same entity that will refuse to secure our southern border and our northern border for that matter, that Department of Homeland Security has decreed white males as being the most serious threat to the future of what they call our democracy than any other entity. And of course, what the left means by democracy is single party rule, like the People's Republic of China and the Soviet People's Republic, the Democratic People's Republic of East Germany, all these places, their definition of democracy is we have one party, we give you the absolute right to vote for it, and to the extent that anybody else poses a challenge to our one-party system, we will destroy them, we'll exile them, or we'll execute them. And we're seeing that happen right now in the United States. I mean, we've got a party in power that is charging everybody who potentially stands a threat to their authoritarian rule, charging with crimes, bringing them up on bogus charges in front of dishonest district attorneys, in front of biased judges, in front of biased juries, and the lawyers that represent them are getting charged, and the lawyers that represent them are being disbarred. And so here we have a world where there is just this pretense of freedom, which is just a wisp now, which we have to either pull it back immediately. We have to, in this election cycle, refuse to elect anybody who's not a pure constitutional conservative, somebody who represents the Constitution as a founding document of our culture, the founding document of our nature. People that will say the government has an inherent desire to control people and to dominate affairs, and our Constitution was created specifically to protect us against those forces that tend to always want to become more powerful. Every organization on the planet, from the smallest charitable organization to the most powerful government in the world, what it chooses to do, what it wants to do, what it believes its lifeblood entails, is becoming bigger, more powerful, wealthier, and controlling more and more territory. And that's why every day when we get up, each and every one of us needs to make a personal vow to fight back against that, to fight back against the swamp, to fight back against those powers that be, and refuse to cooperate, refuse to consent, and stand up for our God-given constitutional rights. And when the government wants to impose unconstitutional restrictions on us or provide others with unconstitutional privileges, we just have to say no and hell no. Well, ladies and gentlemen, being the little bluebird of happiness that I always am, and bringing you joy and peace and comfort on your Sunday evening, I do have one good bit of information today. January 12th, 2024, and I can't do the math in my head because I don't do math. It was an important day. Rush Limbaugh was born January 12th, 1951. That would make him, 5 years older than me? That would make him 72, I guess, if he were still alive. He was the person that created, essentially, this industry, this ability of conservative-minded individuals to get on the radio, to get on television, to do podcasts, and to spread the word, to destroy the monopoly that the mainstream media had on thought, to destroy the monopoly that the left had on what you're allowed to say and who's allowed to say it. They still have that process out there. They still issue Democrat talking points every day, which everybody in the mainstream media immediately learns and repeats like a bunch of stupid parrots. But we have another way of communicating now. We have this way of communicating now. We have hundreds and thousands of conservatives podcasting and broadcasting out there and trying to make this country wake up. And ladies and gentlemen, we need to wake up. This is our last possible time. When somebody runs for office, demand from them a vow to uphold the Constitution, to fight for our God-given individual rights, and to fight against tyranny, because if we don't do it in this election cycle, we will not have another chance. Well, thank you once again for taking your time out to watch this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Mark McCloskey on Fire. Y'all have a super Sunday evening.
Get more Mark McCloskey at NewstalkSTL.com. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire on Newstalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewstalkSTL.com.